Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Hey, welcome to another episode of This Life. Bob Forrest, Dr. Drew, and a couple pieces of business. Remember that what we do here is, it's at this point, it's purely community service.
We're trying to help.
Neither we're paid for this, but number two.
I get
two,
to come to your house on Sundays.
Which is nice. I get to see you and chat with you. But number two is that when we answer calls and things, remember, we are not treating anybody. We are giving you information. It's an educational forum. This, in cases like this, how we'd approach it. So please, do not confuse this with or replace it with what you need to do in your treatment and with your professionals there at home. So we need your support to keep this thing going. So please click through on the Amazon banner. Check out the drdrew.com page, and you can email us there. We'll answer your questions on this podcast. This podcast is now available on iTunes.
We have a Twitter at This Life Podcast.
Okay.
And we also have I call it Twitter. And we also have
but I like that. Go ahead.
We also have a website.
Uh-huh. This Life Podcast.
ThisLifePodcast.com.
And the Twitter handle is again.
So you'll be able to find the episodes there, and it'll click you through to the iTunes.
I'm confused, I'm always confused.
This Life Podcast.
The Twitter handle is at This Life Podcast.
At This Life Podcast. Okay.
So,
but let me tell you what I truly think we're doing. We're like traffic cops. We know where where everything is, and we're just going to point people in directions.
Right.
You know, you've got codependency, go this way. You got a drug addict kid, go that way.
We have a lot of experience with this stuff. Bob and I worked together for 15
years. First I was a patient. That's where I learned.
Listen to the first episode for that. Okay. What's this week's episode?
So this week's episode, we're going to get to a couple calls here, and here they are. All right, so what we have, Bob, is Terry's son, is 23-year-old, primary heroin, who was in a psychiatric facility for 5 days, went out, went back, another psychiatric hospital for 3 days, went back, surprise, surprise, and mom is sort of, for the first time, who's on the phone, Terry is the mom.
Oh, okay.
And Terry is sort of really just starting at this. Did I read right that dad was an alcoholic also?
His father is an alcoholic. His father is an extreme alcoholic. He drinks about two of them box crafts of wine a day.
So has he ever been in recovery, Dad?
No, he absolutely refuses to admit that he's an alcoholic.
And does your son want to get better? Does he want help?
Yeah, he cries for help, and I've tried. But everywhere I've taken him, I did have him on my... I work for a major grocery industry. I had insurance on him, and they weren't, neither one of the two youngest, because I have an older son also who's well on his feet, and they were never using an insurance. So because it was taking a big chunk out of my paycheck, I went ahead and took them off, and I applied for Medicaid for Tyler and the youngest, who's 22. What they offer is absolutely next to nothing. I mean, it's 3 days, 5 days, and then you're on your own.
Right. That's for sure. And that's unfortunately the case. Even with insurance, though, it's not a lot better, as Bob and I know. Or is it getting better, Bob? I mean, are you finding it to be better?
Some's getting better. Somebody's going to have to figure out how to give more adequate care to this Medicare.
Wow. What's Medicaid? Medicare is bad enough. Medicaid,
yeah,
is Medicaid, which is
they used to call it Medi-Cal, right?
Here it's in California. It's Medi-Cal.
Well, where are they at? Where's Terry at?
Illinois.
So what ends up in all different parts of the United States are these not-for-profit rehabs that require a tremendous amount of display of willingness. You have to call in for weeks sometimes to get county beds. Addicts notoriously aren't follow through.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times you as the mother will be the person calling for them. And, it's a mess that we're in with all this addict population across the United States.
Right. So here are the only two ways. Well, there are two ways to approach this. They may overlap. One is what Bob's talking about. He needs on the order of 6 months of treatment, your son. Okay?
And no insurance is going to pay that. Right. No PPO insurance is going to pay that.
No one's going to pay for that. But they will pay for a month, right? Can't you get these Medicaid programs for a month or so?
Yeah, you can.
Yeah. After that, he would go to a residential or sober living, and those are much, much, much less expensive. And that's where he'll have to spend some time after that. And even he can pay for that potentially because he could work while he's there potentially. But that's neither here nor there. Right now, you sort of have a crisis on your hand. So the one possibility...
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, the one possibility is finding places that take Medicaid or beds that have 1 month of treatment. It's not going to be a hospital. It's going to be a residential treatment center in all probability, would you say?
Yeah, and it's good, along the lines of Salvation Army. And a lot of times, people frown on that. A couple of my best friends got sober in the Salvation Army. It's possible to get sober anywhere. There's a safe, contained environment and accountability.
For extended period of time. He needs an extended stay. The other way that's being approached today is a medication called Suboxone, which, again, this is why all the Suboxone, Bob, because of there's no resources to do the real treatment.
But he's not a polysubstance abuser?
Does he use anything besides heroin?
Pardon me, doctor?
Does he use anything besides heroin, just heroin?
If he can't get a hold of heroin, he will take anything he can get. He uses opiates, other opiates, painkillers. If he can't get the heroin,
does he use stimulants like Adderall or benzodiazepine, like
no,
Xanax?
He will take a Xanax now and then, but Tyler has made it very clear to me that he doesn't prefer an upper. He prefers the downer, and he says that, he says the high of heroin is the best high in the world.
Right.
He says he wants to quit. I've driven everywhere. I've called everywhere. A lot of people don't want to talk to me because he's over 18, and there's a waiting, and the more I wait, he goes to neighborhoods that are gang filled. We live right outside of Chicago, and he goes to terrible areas, and I'm going to get a phone call that either my son has been killed or he's overdosed because has been on the news is that they're mixing it with fentanyl, and kids are dying. I mean, it's an epidemic that is awful, and I don't have the financial ability to do it. And I'm lost. I don't want to lose my son. He's extremely smart. He's got patience of gold, but he's got a weakness. And he told me, Mom, are you with me?
Yeah, I feel like you didn't hear what we said before. Hang on. Did you not hear what we told you to do before?
There's options and there's possibilities.
Hang on. Could you literally not hear it, or do you just need to hear it again?
Did I not hear what, doctor?
We gave you some real specific recommendations.
Oh, for the Salvation Army and to call weeping and stuff?
No.
The first, you need to know what he needs. He needs long-term accountability and containment in step-down levels. So he needs an intensive inpatient experience. Whether that intensive inpatient experience lasts 2 weeks or a month, ideally, you take what you can get. Then he needs to be in a good, solid, sober living environment with some sort of outpatient program or some sort of volunteerism. That's what a lot of the new places are doing. Yeah. You'll have outpatient for a month, and then you volunteer if you don't get a job.
Right.
What you're doing, I know, and my own sister did this, which is, have him live at my house, and then he stays sober for a week, and then he runs to the bad neighborhood, and I'm so scared he's going to die. You're never going to win that way. I know it seems like the only way to keep him safe, but those things that you're so fearful of, him dying of a drug overdose or getting killed in a drug deal, or all these, horrible scenarios that we all know are possible, by allowing him to have a place to live and by allowing him to promise you he's going to be sober, when promises don't matter with addicts. They really mean it when they promise, but 5 days later they break the promise. It's a brain disorder. So you need to get him out of his comfort zone and into a place, and that should be your only goal.
I know. I realize that. Believe me, I've called everywhere. I have called everywhere, and they want money. They want a lot of money.
Yeah, no. The,
The
places that pop up on the internet or that hospitals refer you want money. But there are the traditional routes of nonprofit organizations, and I'm sure there are in Chicago, and we could try to find out in the Chicago area where the nonprofit places are.
Like Salvation Army.
Yeah, there's one here called Claire Foundation in Los Angeles. It helps hundreds of addicts on a monthly basis. There's Cry Help and Impact. These are the mainstays of populations like your son. That's where they get sober, in these nonprofit places. Listen, if you had hundreds of millions of dollars, your kid still wouldn't get sober. You'd send him to Malibu, he wouldn't get sober. Then he'd been out here for 2 years. This problem is bigger than money. You're thinking the obstacle for you to get help for your son is money, and I'm telling you it's not. Because people with a lot of money, their sons are dying too. So this is a complex problem.
I know that it runs deeper. I know that there's other issues. He's got a very low self-esteem.
Forget the other issues.
He loves heroin.
Yeah, without the other issues, he has a life-threatening illness, period.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. He's almost died a few times, and I've done life support and taken him to the hospital.
You know what? Listen, one thing you might want to do right away, I think you can get naloxone now over the counter, naltrexone.
Maybe in
Illinois.
You should
keep that on hand if you can get it in Illinois.
Suboxone, doctor?
No.
Naloxone.
Naloxone. It's, if he overdoses, it's something you can inject into him that will reverse the heroin. Yeah, I would keep that on hand if you could. Now, you did mention Suboxone. That is the other way to approach this. Has he ever been on Suboxone?
Well, when he was in the 5-day rehab, they told him that he was going to be on Suboxone. I took him to the doctor that was supposed to give it to him, and he said that because there was no heroin in his body, he could not give it to him.
Wow.
So,
in other words,
yeah. So we walked out of there. The kid threw himself up against my Jeep and just started bawling. He said, "I don't believe I have to use to get it."
That's crazy. I've never heard of such a thing.
I don't know all the details of that. But let me tell you this. You know where they will know where the free county beds are for Illinois? The moms in Al-Anon will know.
That's what I was just thinking, yeah. Naranon.
Yeah. They'll know. Get yourself involved with people to find out, because you can't find out in a vacuum on the internet.
You must go to tonight. One is called Al-Anon, the other is called Naranon.
Either one or both.
Yeah, go to a meeting, talk to the moms there.
And say, where are the county beds? Where are the free beds for drug addicts in Chicago?
And it's a program that you need to participate in anyway, on behalf of your son, on behalf of yourself.
You'll like it, I think. But there's a lot of moms like you, and that's where they all are.
I hope to God, being so close to Chicago, and if he can walk out the door and go get it, he will.
All right, listen, go do what we told you here. Go to these meetings. Try to find a place locally that is either Medicaid or free. Some are free, that will take him.
I've tried. I'm telling you, I've tried.
You've been to Al-Anon? You've been to Naranon?
I go to Al-Anon meetings on Thursday night.
Have you told them you're trying to find a county bed for your son? Share it. Go to the meeting and share. Say, listen, I need to find, Dr. Drew says I need to find a place for my son to go that's a county-run facility that's free, that's covered by the county taxes.
And maybe Naranon would be more likely to have that.
Yeah, Naranon.
You may have to travel a little farther to find a Naranon meeting. They're not as ubiquitous as the Al-Anon. But Naranon moms should know. Okay?
Now, if I may ask, is there usually, do you gentlemen know whether or not this is a long, is there long periods of waiting time with this?
Probably.
Usually up to 2 weeks. It's not as long as they'll tell you because they want to know your degree of willingness because they don't want to waste the bed on somebody who has a consistent pattern of checking in, leaving, you know, and he's starting to establish that pattern. If he went to a detox unit, was sober for 5 days, and just because he can't get Suboxone, he starts talking about using again. This is a confused addict mind. So you got to just treat him like a sick person. Don't listen to what he says. He's sick. His brain is broken. I know.
I believe me, I know. I just don't want to lose him, and I'm pretty close to that. You know, either that or myself. No. I need some help, and I'll do it again. I'll go in there. I'll talk to them, tell them Dr. Drew said, and I'll call everywhere again and see what I can do. I've been trying for.
Call your local health and human services office and ask them.
Okay,
all
so
right, Terry, we got to wrap up.
Doctor, thank you
I love
so
you
much.
Thank
all right,
you.
Terry. Good luck.
I love your show. I love you.
Right.
And thank you.
Take all care.
Right,
so, let me tell you, there's a tsunami across America. There's no beds. There's no places for addicts to get help.
Well, but that's where the replacement therapy comes in, though. That's why that is so popular.
But it doesn't work either.
Well, I know. It works sometimes. It works sometimes.
Yeah.
In a way. It kind of works in quotes. It's better than not being out there with nothing, right?
But there are health and human services buildings in every municipality in the United States, and they're supposed to be handling this kind of.
You know, my departmental health. I mean, there's different things. The departmental health. There's
well, here in California, it just changed to be called the Health and Human Services. Yeah. I don't know what it is, but they have federal allotment or county allotments for amount of beds. I think there's 400 in LA County. 400 county beds.
Beds. And
there's about 4 million addicts.
Yeah, I would say 40,000, 400,000 maybe. Yeah.
And so we as a nation need to start thinking about this because everybody thinks Obamacare is going to just solve everything.
No.
It's not going to solve anything.
As usual, it's not enough to do the job. They can't afford to give insurance for everybody for everything. It's this scant insurance where all you and I have worked with 3 years. You have nothing. You can't get people what they need.
And so why, when you bring up the Salvation Army...
But it's why... The desperation I feel when I hear with these cases, though, isn't it interesting how much Suboxone makes sense then? Because mm-hmm. you feel so desperate. It's like, I got to do something. Well, let's put these people on replacement. Put on methadone. Put on Suboxone. At least they'll live. You know?
I prefer methadone because it's not self-administered. I know you don't like it as much. But at least you have to go to a clinic and feel like a drug addict every day.
I don't like it as much because it's so freaking hard to get off of.
Well, I don't think that we're seeing a flowery future where everyone's going to get off either.
I know.
Because of the amount of volume of addicts in the United States. Yeah. It's crazy.
Hello.
Hey there. Hi. Who we got here?
This is Mike.
Hi,
hey, Mike.
Mike, tell us what's your question.
Well, basically, I've been taking Suboxone for 5 to 6 years.
Here we go.
Heard you speak on it on another podcast. I think it was just a few days ago, maybe weeks ago, actually. And wondering about the long-term effect. I'm not taking too much, and had some comments about taking small amounts.
All right, so good. I'm glad you called because we were just talking about this. And are you having any side effects?
No,
good.
None at all.
Good. And B, are you intending to come off or do you want to come off completely?
I don't, and I have a reason for that.
Go ahead.
I don't. My reason for that is in my past, I have 3 kids and I'm a great wife, and I'm trying to get off the other opiates and other stuff. I was lazy, no energy, weeks would pass, I feel real guilty. So anytime I start going through that again or lack of energy, it reminds me of the past, kind of the guilt.
How much are you on right now?
Right now, I'm taking probably 4 milligrams a day.
Okay. Are there long-term effects? We don't think so. We don't know so for sure because we haven't been using it on humans that long, but it doesn't appear to be a big deal. At 4 milligrams, people usually still complain about some sexual dysfunction and some blunting in feelings. Are you having anything of that nature?
No.
All right.
Not at
all. So coming off doesn't really make sense, does it?
No, I definitely don't want to anytime soon.
All right. So there you go, Bob. So there's a Suboxone success story.
Yeah, no, I get it.
Yeah.
I get it.
Our thing is we're concerned about Suboxone. We see lots of failures, and we see people that have difficulty with it and side effects. And
how old are you?
I'm 38 years old.
See, that's more like it. The problem I've always had is they put 19-year-old and 21-year-old heroin addicts who've been doing it. They're not even heroin addicts. They've been doing heroin for like 8 months. And they put them on, 12 milligrams as a preemptive strike, I think.
Yeah.
And then they end up in your predicament. You know what it's going to take if you want to get off that after 5 or 6 years. It'll take you 3 or 4 months.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm actually, to be honest with you, prescribed 24 milligrams a day. I just don't take that much.
Do you sell the rest? This is all confidential. Do you sell the rest to make a little money?
I'll save them up and say there's people around and I know they're having a problem. Or
there
something.
You go.
I'll
that's
one chance.
Like the Mother Teresa of Suboxone.
Well, yeah.
Be careful. You're prescribing a serious medication.
He's not prescribing it. He's just sharing.
But it's practicing medicine. But are you using anything else besides Suboxone, other drugs?
No. I've been clean for about 5 to 6 years now. I do have another question.
Okay, before you do, I have one question for you, though. This is the question. This is the interesting thing to me.
You going to 12-step meetings?
Do you follow a program?
No.
Yeah. Okay. So then it was weird that you used their terminology for it, clean.
So go ahead. What's your question?
Well, the thing is, I've never really ran into anybody like myself. I'm kind of filled with so much guilt from the past that all I wanted to was to be like not lazy, sick, going through the symptoms. So the minute I was able to be, not really lazier anymore, I basically was done. I never looked back.
So it's interesting. He's interesting. He is a dependent, non-addicted opiate addict. I wouldn't necessarily, in my humble opinion, I wouldn't call what this guy even has addiction. I would call it drug dependency. Is there alcoholism in your family?
No, not really.
See, it's so interesting. That's
so when you were, when did you get into abusing opiates? How old were you?
Well, I was actually anti, probably about 25 years old. Went to the dentist, did some trade work, piling up these prescriptions, and then one day it was really sore, took it, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm extra happy.
Greatest
today.
Feeling on earth. Greatest
and,
feeling
one
on
thing
earth.
Turned into another.
Maybe it's a genie out of the bottle that not all these people should know the greatest feeling on earth.
I'm jealous. It gives me a worse feeling. It gives me a shitty feeling. But
there's a lot of, and initially what you were categorized by the American Society of Addiction Medicine was called a pseudo addict. You were someone who is addicted to opioids.
Well, now they call it use disorder.
Well, so I like pseudo addict. Yeah. Don't you like pseudo addict better? You're not a drug addict like has to go to rehab and end up going to 12-step meetings the rest of your life. You're in this other category.
Yeah. Mike, we got to run. Did we answer your questions? Is this what you came for?
Yes. I did have a weird getting off question. I did have a solution, but I know what you'd say probably already.
Well, go ahead.
But Suboxone is very hard to get off, harder than heroin.
I agree.
Basically, if you reversed it for somebody like myself only and stopped taking Suboxone, started taking, say, 10 milligram Vicodins a day, 1 week.
Yeah, that's the old way.
We've done things like that before, believe me.
Yeah. They used to have a kit here in Los Angeles, a doctor named Dr. Howard Mark. And he had a kit where he gave you 90 Vicodin. And you're supposed to take 10 one day, then
no one ever did that.
9, then
But I have had people. I've had people go on heroin to get off methadone. I've had things like that happen. But anyway, appreciate your call, Mike. We got to run.
Thanks so much.
Okay.
Good question.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
You bet. So there's a great use for Suboxone right there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I would have certainly wished he could have tapered off completely.
Because of the kids, I think.
Yeah. And he's an adult. He has an intact regulatory system. You know what I mean?
Well, let's just get into who's populating the rehab centers for a second. Yeah. These are not adults. These are non-functioning people.
Are you aware
people.
What's going on college campuses right now?
Oh, yeah. I'm very... Yeah,
because
I've
that's
seen it.
You're seeing a version. You're seeing the pathology that associated with that. Hold on. Can we talk about this for a few minutes? My college, they've now taken over and said they don't want to go to class, and they need to be...
Black Lives Matter? Or
yes,
because of what?
Essentially that. and everyone needs to be retrained. Anyone
See,
that
everybody wants to jump on a cause. Everybody has a little antisocial personality except for you.
But you're not allowed to laugh.
But
means you have a little bit of that.
We know I do.
So, but I'm telling you, there's people jumping on bandwagons. It's the craziest thing ever.
But here's my problem, which is that the people that want to have an alternative opinion are vilified and told they need to go to re-education. That's Mao. That's Mao Zedong. That's the Cultural Revolution. As opposed to let's have a discourse, a dialogue.
Well, I've been trying to have it about what's going on, what went on in Paris, and it's impossible. These kids have never had a job. Rehab traditionally was for people with jobs who were starting to fall behind to get stabilized, get a game plan, 12-step oriented game plan together, and go back to their lives.
Yeah.
Rehab is now filled with people that don't have lives to go back to.
And have no intention to go back to a life.
So... We got the people who do have access to care almost don't, it's not going to work for them. And then.
That's what you've been struggling with lately.
And then.
Getting a life.
The people that don't have access to care, not that they want sobriety anymore.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Sobriety is the eye of a needle to begin with.
Yeah.
But who has access to care in this country, it's not going to work for. There you go.
Hey there. Who's this now?
Dope.
Hello.
Hey there.
Hi, guys.
Thanks for joining us.
Hey, man.
My pleasure. I go way back with both of you guys, so it's an honor to talk to you.
Oh, it's fun to see you.
I used to be drunk and high at T-Monster shows, but I'm 24 years sober myself, and now I work.
Right on.
Yeah. So I wanted to follow up on your first episode. I apologize because I know you guys are talking about more important things today, but when you had Joe Blazer on, he was talking about his hopes that when drugs are legalized, that it would lead to more treatment. He said it would result in identifying and treating the addicts. And then I just was thinking of alcohol, because like right after that, I was in the supermarket and the three guys in front of me all had alcohol. It was like quitting time, you know, getting off work. And then the guy pulls up behind me with a 12-pack too. And I was thinking, we've kind of tested this model. I mean, it's capitalism for the companies who are going to sell, and then it's taxes for the government. I don't see anybody identifying and treating all these functional alcoholics, my family among them. I'm the only one who's really sober.
So it would let a genie out of the bottle that would have far more serious consequences than you might imagine.
To me, that's most interesting is I make my income really comes from court cases, alternative sentencing, because I don't want to work in a rehab and I don't want to be a sober companion. So I found this niche, which is to work in alternative sentencing. I've helped people who robbed banks get drug treatment because they were high and they were seeking drug money.
Right.
That's going to go away once drugs would be decriminalized. You'll be held accountable for your actions.
So,
I want a society that people... Now, I'm slitting my own throat because I'm not going to make it.
Yeah, but
that, you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah. So, but...
Alternative sentencing will go away with the decriminalization.
Maybe decriminally... He was advocating complete legalization, right?
Yeah, that's madness. But but okay, I do
well,
believe...
I'm sorry, what's the caller's name? I'm sorry.
Doa.
That's what Doa said.
But I do believe
Doa
it's going to be decriminalized. I do. It already is. They're not arresting people for heroin possession, Drew.
Yeah.
They just throw it on the ground like they used to pot.
Doa, what do you think?
Well, and it's not a loaded question because I am 100% sober. But let's just look at like marijuana. I don't even know how to vote. Like, just blunt, guys. Your no-spin answer. Like, would you vote to legalize marijuana? Do you think it's an ultimate good for our society?
Well, is it an ultimate good? No, I don't think it's an ultimate good.
There are no good options with this stuff. But, one is the racial injustice over the drug laws in America are good enough for me that we need to change them. That a white kid with marijuana, it gets thrown in the gutter. A black kid with marijuana goes to prison. That we know happens all the time in California. That has to stop as it's decriminalized.
Well, the Colorado is our case study, right? That's what we have to look at. And indeed, problems with young people getting exposed is going up. Admissions are up, for both as a primary and a secondary drug. Adverse consequences, adverse side effects, all up, up, up. The question is, though, will that go for a while and then some sort of steady state will be achieved when people start to really look at this thing honestly? Because there's no political energy around it, they can really just evaluate it objectively and go, this isn't so good. Maybe we shouldn't be doing this. Think that will
happen?
There's
no going back, though.
I'm not saying go back. I'm just saying...
I'm saying if it gets crazy out of control, I don't see how it is going to roll back at a certain point.
But I'm not saying go back. All I'm concerned about is human well-being. And my thing is, if it's legal and they start to realize what the adverse consequences are, maybe they'll start to have a more rational relationship with it.
Maybe the individuals will determine that and not government.
Well, because there isn't all that political energy around it, the individuals will look at it. I couldn't even have a conversation about it in Colorado before it was legalized. People would freak out. They just freak out. I had a guy come into my face, start screaming at me.
Because you're against pot?
I wasn't even against pot. I was just saying I'm concerned about people having yeah, you know.
But
so,
we can't be everybody's mother and caretaker. Sick of it. I'm sick of worrying about what 20-year-olds are going to do. They need to worry about what they're going to do. That we've gotten into a society that's just too concerned with the well-being of people, you know, that are grown adults, and now we're coddling everyone.
Everybody's so precious.
Up to 26 now.
Everybody's precious.
You know that the law basically says you're somehow a child of some manner until you're 26.
This is about renting a car and having insurance. What are you talking about?
No, and health insurance.
Yeah. So let's let Doa finish his case here. Go ahead.
They're not treating the alcoholics. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, you guys, you helped me out just hearing the discussion, but my worry is I just look at all these people spending so much of their family's money on alcohol because it's legal, and then I just see them doing it with other drugs.
Yeah,
and
you're right.
I work with, I work with at-risk youth, and I just don't want to send a message that it's somehow okay because it's legal. But Bob's point on the racial issue is very concerning, and he's right.
Yeah. All right, my friend. Thank you for calling.
So thanks a lot, guys.
Appreciate it. Thanks for listening to us. We'll try to get to interesting stuff here.
That's really something I never, we didn't talk about, but that's how I feel about it.
I
know there are African-American young men in prison for things that white kids do all the time.
I actually think, listen.
And giving that leeway to the officer who arrests them, decides to arrest or not arrest them, and then to the DA who decides whether to prosecute or not prosecute, and then just leave it up to the judge to whether they go to prison or whether they go to a fire camp or whether they go to probation.
Really, really gets
there's
too.
Too much leeway because you know what a slam dunk is?
Yeah.
An African-American kid, especially male, standing in a courtroom who's done something bad.
But listen. It gets even more difficult when you really start to examine what's happening. And I think this needs to be studied carefully. I think police need to take care of this issue, which the answer is community policing, which is the white kid gets caught and goes, I'm sorry, officer, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, and just holds his hands up. The black kid even gets approached by the cop. He thinks he's going to get killed, and he runs, and that's it. Now, it's a whole different thing. It's resisting arrest. It goes into a different category now, just because of the way the police and the African American community are related.
Mm-hmm.
That's where they have got to do something.
Well, who's gonna hold them accountable for doing
something? Well, it's changing, and that's happening. I think it seems like it is. People I know in law enforcement are. At least want to change it.
You know, basically my theme is drugs aren't the problem. People are the problem.
Of course.
And if people are the problem, then the way we raise people in this country is the problem.
Of course.
Right?
Of course.
because my dad raised me right. That's how I got off drugs, I think. I don't think these kids I'm dealing with were raised right, and I don't think they can get off drugs.
And what does that mean, raised right?
That I'm responsible for me.
How did he do that?
In big and little ways. You know what I mean? That's
not a parenting manual.
Well, it mostly was centered around sports. That if I effed up or I was taken out in the fourth quarter, it was because I didn't practice hard enough. It wasn't, oh my gosh, poor baby Bobby.
Yeah.
Poor Bobby, let me hug you.
Yeah.
You're crying because you got pulled out in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
You know,
practice harder next time.
Practice hard, or don't be a ball hog. I was a ball hog, believe it or not.
What position?
Point guard.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
I would shoot too much, and then the coach would pull me out in the fourth quarter if we were behind, and I'd be pouting and kicking the chair, and I'm the best player here. And my dad would just drive me home and say, "You might want to think about what you're doing out there. What is your position? What is your job?" You know, not like, oh, not aligning. I see a lot of parents nowadays, they're that coach.
Splitting. Yeah.
So it's in the little things.
Colluding.
In how parents are raising children. You know, hello. I did it with my older son.
Who is this now?
Who's this?
Eric, can you hear us?
Eric?
Yes.
Hey there. Thanks for calling.
What's happening, man?
I was expecting a call, hopefully. I'm glad you guys called.
Oh, great.
Here it is.
What's going on?
It was kind of a 50-50 there. I emailed. My question is basically, you know, I've a fat alcoholic is how I can describe myself. I could go 3, 4, 5 days without drinking, but those cravings hit. I never have any physical withdrawals, anything else. It's the mental, and I'm getting to the point to where I just drink so I stop thinking about drinking. Make sense?
So the obsession, yeah. So you're a binge alcoholic.
Yes.
Yeah.
You drinking today?
I did not drink today. I took care of that last night so I wouldn't think about it today, so I could be kind of productive today.
Oh, okay. Are you hurting from last night?
A little bit, but I've been doing it so long that it's the hurt is normal.
Okay.
Do you have any medical problems as a result? Liver problems, high blood pressure?
High blood pressure. That's it. And that's more from the weight than the drinking, although the drinking doesn't help.
Right. Okay, so, Bob, go ahead.
There's no magic bullet. You already know the kind of liabilities you have, and the question is what to do about how to find a motivation to really persevere over it, right?
Or do you want to?
And I do want to. A few months ago, I started going to counseling for depression. I actually I read something a while back that it was an Artie Lane article, and I agree with what he said as far as I don't know what came first, the drinking or the depression, what caused what?
Well,
depression came first.
Yeah, they're distinct problems that you know, each needs to be treated in its own way. They overlap. They're parallel problems that overlap and fuel one another.
But one interesting thing is the alcohol seems like the solution to the depression, but it actually then comes out the other side and is causing more depression.
That's right.
Less involvement with other people, less goal meeting. You know, one of the things I've had friends that if you truly are a periodic, it's called, or a binge drinker, attack the other problem. Get out and start walking. Get out and start playing basketball, doing what you can. Get active.
Well, that's your time. So are you doing cognitive behavioral therapy with your therapist?
It's just a counselor. So
all right. So our connection is terrible here, but typically people will do motivational interviewing, motivational enhancement, and cognitive behavioral therapy, which is exactly what you're talking about. Hey, man, let's go lose some weight. But
not lose some weight, just become active.
Yeah.
There's a big difference.
Yeah. No, you're right. It's listen to some classical music and take long walks. Let's just start there. Or just put one foot in front of the other.
Go out to lunch out in Pasadena with your girlfriend's parents. Yeah. Not top of my list, but that's what I did today, and it was fun. It was fucking fun.
Are they from Pasadena?
No, Claremont. Yeah. It's halfway. Yeah. You know what I mean? But that depression, which I have, is always has a tendency like, no, I'd rather not.
Yeah.
And what Dr. Roland Kim taught me is go do it.
Yeah.
Just say yes. Yeah. And it changes the way, and then you have a reason to stop drinking.
Right, it's a meaning. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, a connection, a meaning. And I agree. And I think, though, binge alcoholics are particularly difficult to treat because they have the illusion that they can control it. Eric's sort of beginning to, now that he's in some therapy, he's having his depression treated, this is starting to come into focus for him as a separate problem. And probably will need some separate treatment, I suspect.
What do you like to do, Eric?
Well, within the last year, I've always been kind of a bigger guy, 250, 300. And the last year, the depression and the drinking got so bad, I gained 100 pounds in a matter of a year.
Okay.
Can I ask something? Listen, I spend a lot of time sort of listening to people talk, and I get weird impressions. But do you have something secret or something you're ashamed of?
I mean, I've been married and divorced twice. And I was actually thinking about this the other day. I can remember the parts of the divorce and the hurt more than I can remember the weddings.
Well, that's the depression. The depression makes you remember the negative things. But I get a distinct feeling that shame is an issue for you.
It is. It is.
Yeah.
It is. With the last marriage, I had two stepkids. And... Hello?
Yeah, we're here. We're here.
Okay. I had two stepkids, and I think... You know, once I started to drink, and once the relationship got bad, I wasn't doing right by them. No physical abuse or anything like that, but I could have done things better. I don't know. Yeah. A lot of shame.
All right. So, you know, the one we're going to put you on hold here because our connection is really crappy, I mean, I think 12-step is a wonderful environment to deal with shame because there's so many people that come in there with a shitload of shame. And just have another guy sit across and go, yeah, dude.
Where does he live at?
Eric, where do you live?
In Houston.
Houston,
oh,
Texas.
Oh, Houston. Okay, yeah, I would say.
Mia Menninger's is
right
there,
dude.
A lot of
big support groups there.
Oh, my God. One of the greatest treatment centers around is called Menninger's Institute. It's right there. They have lots of resources.
I've done 12-step or gone to AA meetings before. I think my problem with those is I'll go in and all the stories I hear of DUI and Skid Row, and, you know, lost 5 jobs, and I can't relate to any of that. I've never had a DUI.
Right. This is why the binge alcoholic is so difficult to treat. Mm-hmm. They feel different. They have the illusion.
Maybe going to OA or something. But,
What's OA?
Overeaters Anonymous.
Okay.
You want to relate?
Listen, I think here. Let's leave it at this. I think the fact that he's in therapy and getting his depression treated is a great place to start. That we believe you're going to have to do something with that shame and with the alcoholism, probably separate from individual therapy, probably. Though a binge alcoholic is someone that can benefit greatly from individual therapy. Maybe your therapist knows some program that has more binge alcoholics in the room. You know, they're around in Houston, trust me.
Yeah.
And Menninger's, again, I've had people treated at Menninger's. It's such a great place. You ever dealt with Menninger's?
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
Has an adolescent program, too.
So, Eric, we got to say farewell. Thank you so much for the call.
Thank you for taking my call.
All right, buddy. Thanks. Good luck.
Let's just talk about this for a second, though. Yeah. When you have these multiple kind of life-threatening conditions, right?
Yeah.
You got depression.
Yeah.
He's of that age bracket.
Yep.
Suicide rates are rising.
Yep.
He has alcoholism.
He has shame and obesity and stuff.
I believe the obesity and the eating is somewhere where you could start, where you really feel constructive.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, he could. But again, you're right, sort of trying to find something that speaks to that individual. I'm not sure he was ready for... There's something else going on. I could feel it. There's something else going on that he's ashamed of.
He's alone. If you're alone and you're depressed. And
So Bob, this was our show where we take a few calls and talk to people.
See what's going across the country, what's going on.
Well, I want to do
people
some more shows.
People are troubled, people are sad, people are depressed, people are on drugs, people are eating themselves to death.
And as we've said on previous episodes, I want to talk more globally. I want to talk, we touched on it a little bit here, but talk about college campuses. I want to talk about African-American, Black Lives Matter movement and the policing.
Well, the point is, here's a cross-section of the United States.
Yeah.
Here's people what people are going through. Yeah. Moms can't find treatment for their drug addict sons, but won't listen to anyone in any constructive way of like, well, why is he living there? If he's running off taking heroin all the time, he shouldn't be living there.
And we didn't finish this thought, because the way addiction works is they pull everybody in. The disease includes everyone around them. And the one way that every addict deals with their mom is they convince the mom on some level that the child is going to die if mom isn't there intervening like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, remember Michael, our guy we treated in the rehab show on TV? Michael?
The little kid, yeah.
Meth. He was from
New Jersey.
Yeah. He's doing great, you know.
And he's been out here this whole time.
He's doing great, and his mom is doing extra great. And she now looks back at herself and giggles, you know. I
mean,
she understands what we were talking about, but boy, it takes a lot of work to do that.
My gut feeling is a lot of people have lost vision of what we're doing here, purpose.
Humans.
Yeah, humans. And so moms aren't, you know, my idea of parenting is, okay, I'm going to put my life aside for 18 years here, and then I'm going back to what I fucking like to do. And parents aren't doing that.
Hey, Susan, can you relate to that?
Right?
Yeah.
They're not doing that.
It's hard, yeah.
My parents couldn't wait till we were going to be gone.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And nowadays, you're a bad person if you think that about your kids.
So in this cross-section, we heard about moms struggling for treatment. We've heard binge alcohol, not really wanting 12-step, but doing good with therapy. Okay, good.
Depression, divorce,
all the stuff that swirls around
food.
Alcoholism. We also heard about Suboxone, which is interesting, right? That was an interesting call, I thought. So again,
Suboxone working, we're open-minded.
Yeah, we were interested in helping people. So whenever people get too deep into philosophies about treatment, be careful. What you get into is what works. And, you know, what works for some people, there may be other ways to skin the horse, so to speak. All right, so that does it for this episode of This Life. We'll see you next time.
See you later. This is a real life.